do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling the transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Simple Flight Radio for Sunday, October 7th, 2012. This is your first officer, Mark Eppner, and I'll be taking this leg of our short two-hour trip this evening, and I'm pleased you've chosen to join us on Simple Flight. As usual, I'm joined by our captain, Al Waterloo. Hey, Al, how you doing this evening?
This is your captain speaking. I'm doing great. How are you?
See, we're so formal. We got to be more relaxed with that opening, but I love that King Air start. It just, to me, is awesome.
It is. I love it. There's nothing like a PT-6 starting up and introducing fuel.
Yes, just like we introduced our guests.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, we pour fuel on the fire, and it's a good things happen.
Absolutely. Hey, this is going to be a little bit different show than normal.
How so?
Well, as you know, we are normally live, and I have to tell our audience, we are pre-recording this. I think it's Thursday. It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
So if there's any, like, major aviation events on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, people are going to say, why aren't they bringing that up?
We'll tweet about them.
Well, yeah. But they can tweet about them. They just can't call the show.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, and why are we pre-recording this? I think it's all your fault or all to
it
your
is.
Credit.
Well, as a typical pilot in command, there's always somebody to blame for something, and I have to take the blame for this being the pilot in command. But this week, on Sunday night, I am going to be flying a 737.
From the left seat?
No, from seat probably 17A, which is one a cool window seat. But I'm going to be flying back from Tampa, Florida. This week I am going down to Jack Brown Seaplane Base in Winter Haven, Florida, to do seaplane rating.
You mean you're going to have a check ride this weekend?
I am.
Are you ready?
I think so.
I mean, I'm sure you'll do fine on the flying part. What about that oral? Do you guys have to study for seaplane rating?
You do. And the nice thing about Jack Brown's is that they do a nice ground school session that coexists with your flight training and all
that.
That's
cool.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I'm going down with some old flying buddies and all that.
I hope as a result of this you buy an amphib or some kind of seaplane and you put it in the club and we can take advantage of that with this great Midwestern Lake Michigan and all these lakes around here. I'd love to do that myself.
Absolutely. Well, the opportunity shall arise at some point. I could feel it.
Yeah. Well, so this is going to be pre-recorded, as I just said. So please, while we normally would love to have you call in, no one will answer the phone this time. But we'll all be wishing Al well on his attempt to add yet another rating to the long list of ratings that he has. This I can tell this is like every other show. You're already looking at your phone to see if people are tweeting. Al, this is pre-recorded. No one's listening at
I'm
this
I'm looking
moment.
For the tweets.
Hey. Where are they? Tweet, tweet, tweet. Yeah, hashtag Simple Flight.
Hashtag Simple Flight. We love it when you tweet us.
You know, I have to tell you this... social media. You know, I was on board with it, but I've learned so much more just through this show.
Yeah.
And truly, I've always felt a strong connection to the aviation community, but adding social media, i.e. Twitter, and even Facebook to some extent, but really Twitter, really enhances it, and the community is really a lot larger than I had thought, or at least I have now communication with a much larger audience as part of that very special community in which we belong.
Very much so. I think, let's go up to Oshkosh next year together, and you can have a great time just tweeting your way through Oshkosh.
That'll be new for me, because I just love, of course, just going up there and taking it all in. It's kind of like my, what we used to call TMI, maybe they still do it, the Transcendental Meditation that we did as youngsters. Now I just take in all of Oshkosh, and it takes me to a whole new level and a whole new place. It's very relaxing and exciting all at the same time.
Yeah, you're going to get like, I didn't know you could get all like Buddha on us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Al, we have a great show tonight. I know that you and I have been planning out a lot of the shows. I've been really looking forward to tonight's show, and I think our audience is absolutely going to love it, and we're going to get a lot of positive feedback.
Absolutely. I think this is this show is more of a, while planning it and exploring it, it's been a kind of a neat little ride.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot, and, I think tonight you're really going to find somebody truly doing amazing things in aviation.
And we'll get to that in a second with introductions and an interview with a very special guest. And if you've been out to simpleflight.net, you've seen the advertisement with Charles Stites, Executive Director of Ableflight.
Yeah.
But I think we have some other
I think so
obligatory
too.
So items to take care of.
Not all is going to be lost with the show. Actually, I'm kind of looking forward to Sunday night because I'm flying Southwest Airlines back. They have Wi-Fi on board, and I'm going to listen to the show at 35,000 feet.
Oh, that is pretty cool.
That's a new Simple Flight must. But
are you going to put speakers on so everyone will be forced to listen?
That's a great idea. I'll do that. But but you know what? Do you think you would be able to make me laugh at 35,000 feet?
Well, you know, I actually had some jokes, but I got an old reminder, a reminder of an old string, and let me just pull it up here, which is actually the response between the pilots reporting an issue and maintenance. Do you remember that by chance?
Yeah, so do you know what they call that in the airlines? The mate. So you have a write up when something's broken on the airplane. The pilot has to report it and then call it into the maintenance department. The maintenance department comes out and fixes whatever's broken. But they have a one thing that the logbook for the airplane is called the CAN.
The CAN?
The CAN. So these would be some neat little. They're looking it up and writing these things down, reporting all these different miscellaneous write-ups, and they're logging it in the CAN, the official logbook of the airplane.
Okay, I'm glad to know that, and of course, I had it here. Just give me a second. Oh, I found it. At least I found one version of it. So let me go through a couple of these. Now, this may be taken better by the audience, although I think the little stories we've been telling over the last several weeks have been funny, but these things just make me laugh. So it's presented as a problem and a solution, right? So the problem reported by the pilot in the CAN, that just sounds funny to say, by the way, left inside main tire almost needs replacement.
Almost?
And then the response by the mechanic was, almost replaced, left inside main tire. Test flight okay, except auto land very rough. Response, auto land not installed on this aircraft. Something loose in cockpit. Response, something tightened in cockpit.
Ooh.
Ooh, yes.
What is that?
The autopilot in altitude hold mode produces a 200 foot per minute descent. And of course, the mechanic said, cannot reproduce problem on ground. Dead bugs on windshield, live bugs on order. DME volume, unbelievably loud. Volume set to more believable level.
Wow. So he didn't think it was going to be... I just didn't trust it because it was too loud.
target radar hums. Reprogram target radar with the lyrics. Aircraft handles funny. Aircraft warned to straighten up, fly right, and be serious. All right. I decided these aren't as funny as I thought, but this it made me laugh when I first saw them, and there's actually a few more, but I think in the spirit of keeping the listenership going, I think I'll stop there.
Yeah, please stop right there, and just let the maintenance department fix the problems that there already are. Well, that was good. I hope that makes me laugh at 35,000 feet.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, there's one that I... as a quick, we'll call it rebound, I heard a story of back in the war, I think it was a bomber of some sort, whatever, B-24, whatever. pilot, co-pilot, and the navigator got on board, and the captain puts a .38 revolver on the glare shield.
Whoa.
And he looks to the navigator. He says, you know what I use that for? The navigator says, no, what? He says, I use that to shoot navigators to get me lost.
Oh!
And then the navigator pulls out a .45 and puts it on that. And he says to the captain, you know what I use this for? Captain said, no. And he said, I know we're lost before you do.
Oh, jeez. All right. that sounds like a Wild West, how the West was
won. This may be a little bit off week for me on the Sunday night chuckle, but hey, we give it our best shot, and you win some and you lose some.
Hey, I think that's a good opportunity for me to start getting some better jokes.
No. The problem is this is Wednesday. If this were Sunday, I'd be okay. I had 3 days of prep taken away from me.
Yeah, right.
What about you? Do you have one, or are you going to just pass this week?
Well, I had. So I was on a flight once.
So was
and
I.
Were you really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was right across the aisle from
no
you.
No kidding. Well, you would have remembered this then. Remember that flight that we were on? And on the left side of the airplane, you hear this big boom, this big bang.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that big bang on that flight? And we're coming back into Chicago, and everybody got jostled around, and the plane yawed all over the place, and everybody got up and went to the left side of the airplane and looked. Well, the engine blew up. And remember that? It was like, whoa.
Yeah, there was fire and sparks.
Fire and sparks and everything. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, on the right side of the airplane, it went boom. And everybody was startled. And
the sound effects just make the whole joke.
Everybody ran over to the right side of the airplane, and they looked out the window and saw, whoa. The right engine blew up, too.
This can't be a good feeling.
No. Well, everybody started screaming and panicking and getting all frustrated and all that. And the flight crew came out, and they're all calm and collective. And they just came out and said, everybody, it's going to be okay. And they started putting on... I remember this. They started putting on parachutes.
Yeah, looking for yours, I bet.
Yeah, I was looking for mine. I was like, "Oh man, where's my parachute?" And they said, "No, everybody relax. We're going to jump out and we're going to go find help. Everything will be okay."
Tell me more.
Yeah. Wow. Where's your laugh? Oh, jeez.
Well, I know there's more coming.
That's it.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Actually, this is I've heard it before.
Wow.
I've actually heard the joke before, and I heard it with the more of a punchline. Actually, two different endings to it, so I thought I was going to wait for you. So
wow.
Our secret is out.
Yeah,
oh my
thanks.
Goodness. That makes me laugh even harder.
Wow, another fail. That's a hot start for a joke. Abort the start. Man.
Yeah.
Well, good try.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe next week we'll use the same joke and actually finish it.
Yeah. Dang. Dang. So, tough crowd.
It is a tough crowd, but sometimes it's deserved. Yeah. Shh, shh. Everyone go to sleep now.
Yeah.
Is this mic on?
Hot mic.
Well, let's do get through some of these prerequisites, get through the checklist, if you will, and that one part of the show that I know a lot of people enjoy is our This Day in Aviation
History. Yeah, so the neat thing is, so on October 7th, 2012, This Day in Aviation, not 2012.
It's not the future.
Hopefully I'll have passed my seaplane rating.
Yeah, you know, that's what we should do. We should actually take a little poll here.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I wonder if people could start tweeting us just saying, I think he passed, and we can do like an American Idol vote.
Yeah.
And then find out if it comes to fruition in this time of voting and election results and those kinds of things.
Yeah, right. Well, let's rewind the clock a little bit to 1919. That's the year my grandmother was born.
Ah, happy birthday.
Thanks, I guess. Did you know that KLM, it's the flagship carrier of the Netherlands?
I know KLM, yes.
And it was founded back on October 7th, 1919. And it is it's the oldest airline still operating under its original name.
No kidding, that's something. A little bit of trivia.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the flagship carrier of the Netherlands, and that's noticed by their blue and white, bright blue paint scheme and all that. It's kind of a cool looking airplane. And I am not going to ask you what KLM stands for because I have no clue how to pronounce it.
Well, I was going to say, I've certainly seen it, but I don't know that I could pronounce it either.
I'll tweet the name.
Well, if I knew how to spell the word cool, we could say KLM stood for like cool looking machine.
Yeah. Well, let's say it's that.
Yeah. Well, I'm Mark with a C, so cool can be with a K.
Yeah. Right.
We'll just go with that. Many people working at KLM that listen to the show are going, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I learned something new.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how we top each other with history, but I think just by going earlier in aviation history, I can top you.
How?
Because in 1908, right?
Get
out
of town.
Certainly before 1919, on October 7th, Mrs. Hart Oberg. And do you know Mrs. Hart Oberg?
I do not know her at all.
Well, she was the wife of the Wright Brothers European business manager. She flew with Wilbur in England and became the first woman to fly in airplanes.
Really?
Yeah.
The first woman to fly in an airplane.
Yeah, actually, the notation in a diary of Bishop Milton Wright's diary, he actually said she was, Madame Bollet, wife of French engine manufacturer Léon Bollet, soon after became the second woman passenger in a heavier-than-air machine in October 1908. But I guess it was Hart Oberg became the first.
Really?
Yeah. How cool is that? You didn't know that was coming.
I did not know that was coming.
Well, mark it down. You heard it here first.
Man, you got me.
Well, just always remember that. I've got you every week.
Wow, definitely. Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, actually, I'm reading on into this my little cheat sheet here. There's a lot of neat things that maybe can be brought up at different times of our show. The things that went on from the first people that started to fly by group, whether it's gender or whatever, after the Wright brothers began to fly.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, really neat, though.
Very cool stuff.
Very cool.
So you're going to Tampa?
I'm flying into Tampa, and we're going to be flying in Winter Haven, Florida.
All right.
And there's a lake right around there. And Jack Brown has a seaplane base there called Brown's Foxtrot 57. And it's right on one of the little lakes next to the Winter Haven Airport.
Well, I'm looking out here. It's Wednesday, and it's rainy and just a little bit of chill in the Chicago air. But
yeah.
I'm wondering what's kind of going on down there at
that's a good question because I had to pack a bag and I didn't know what to pack.
So I guess getting even current weather might give us a little bit of an indication.
Yeah, let's see what's going on down there because I think that's a
Altimeter 3014.
Wow.
Remarks.
High pressure.
The altitude 1,300.
Wow, that sounds high.
Speed Winter point. Haven's Gilbert Airport, Winter Haven, Florida. Automated weather observation 1501 Zulu. Wind 190 at 05. Visibility 10. Sky.
Uh oh. Sky condition is clear.
Oh, okay, I'm glad you added that. All I heard was sky condition beep beep.
Beep, beep.
Someone must have said dropped an F-bomb or something and had to be censored out.
Yeah, right. I didn't know that computer swears.
Yeah, well, now you know. You're learning a whole bunch of new things
it
today.
It sounds like a nice day. And let me tell you this. I'd pack shorts.
I look at you, and I used to know someone that I actually coached basketball with. Kind of look like you. 365 days a year, the guy wore shorts.
No kidding.
Yeah, you look like you're a shorts guy even in the winter.
I do rock some shorts. I'm wearing shorts right now, but that's anticipation for getting off in sunny Tampa. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's still early fall, right, as we hit October 7th, so.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, it's 78 down there. Not bad.
Yeah, no, matter of fact, I think I might join you.
Yeah.
You know, we should have just done the show from down there.
Yeah, you should have thought ahead.
Yeah, maybe if you tell me about it, I would think ahead.
Absolutely.
So what did you do in aviation this week, Al?
Well, I got to fly.
And, of course, this is a short week, so it's a little compressed.
Well, guess what? I got to fly up to Minneapolis-St. Paul.
All right, good little destination. MSP, or did you land?
Yeah, it's a MSP.
Yeah,
the Worrell Chamberlain Airport, not World. It's WORL Chamberlain Airport, and it was kind of a neat trip. It's nice. I like flying into that airport, and in the spirit of things, even though we're not live from Signature today, we did part of our show via at Signature.
That's right,
and so. Signature is pretty awesome in that respect. It's a great place to park an airplane, great place to do a radio show. There's multiple locations all over the country, and part of this week's show, part of it comes from the Signature FBO in Minneapolis.
Well, and that's every week. Signature Flight Support is wonderful to us, and even though we're not using the KPWK studios that we normally use because of the pre-recording, it is available to us, and even when you travel, they have made their facilities available to us, so we certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, they're always there. They're really nice. And they have just as good popcorn in Minneapolis as they do at Chicago Executive.
Yeah, but tell me, do they have the muffins?
They do.
Ah, I thought we had a little special thing going on there.
Negative. They have the muffins there that are really nice. They have the cookies as well as free bottles of water.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to start talking to the guys at Papa Whiskey Kilo.
Yeah.
Which is the Chicago Executive Airport, and make sure we stay up with the Minneapolis folks.
Definitely. Well.
And then, so continuing the theme, this week I actually have a flight planned this evening or this late afternoon. I've got a friend in town that has just started his pilot training. Or I should say not just started, but let's say in the middle of his pilot training toward his private pilot license, and he's on his way to L.A. and said, hey, why don't we go flying? So
that sounds great.
Yeah, I was planning to take him up in the SR-22, but it was needed for a longer business trip, so I worked out something, as friends do, and I'm going to move us to the Dakota, which should be a fun around Chicago trip, even though we may be above a cloud deck. And right here would be the Sears Tower, and there the Hancock building would be if we were below these clouds.
Absolutely.
So my story will yet to come, but looking forward to going flying today.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a good time.
So let's get into the meat of the matter.
The meat of the matter,
yeah.
But first...
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Got to get the obligatory sponsorship and station ID in.
Absolutely.
So you and I have been looking forward to this this show for a long time.
We have.
And I think people are going to find out why right now. Prior to just a couple weeks ago, answer this question for me. Had you ever heard of Able Flight?
I have not.
Right? And I hadn't either. And if it weren't for our club, Leading Edge Flying Club,
correct,
picking up an airplane called a Sky Arrow. I mean, were you even familiar with a Sky Arrow?
I had no clue until about 2 months ago when there was a little buzz about a new member to our flying club.
Right. So for our listeners, a Sky Arrow is not a Piper Arrow. It's an aircraft that is manufactured in Rome, Italy. It's a Part 23 manufactured aircraft, certified. And the Sky Arrow actually has two versions. They have an LSA version, the Model 600, and the Model 650, which is the one I'm referencing. The 650 meets LSA standards on several fronts. Its gross weight is a little high, so that's why the one that we have isn't technically an LSA. But it's a tandem-seater, 100-horsepower Rotax, and actually you got in it, and it's like a little fighter. But
it's awesome.
It looks very cool. I can't wait to get checked out, and hopefully within the next week. We just got it at Papa Whiskey Kilo. We're supposed to call it Chicago Executive. Let's face it, we still all call it Palwaukee.
Palwaukee.
At the corner of Palatine and Milwaukee Avenue. So
is that how it came about, the name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get out of town. I did not know that.
Really?
I did not know. Wow.
Yeah, Palatine Road and Milwaukee Avenue, and it's Palwaukee.
Holy smokes. That's
actually
cool.
There's a lot of streets and shopping areas and all named that way in Chicago. If you go around and you see like funky names, they're because of the corner, the intersection of two streets. That's where they get their name from.
Wow, you have enlightened me.
So, anyway, go on with the Sky Arrow. As I like to do, and you've heard me talk about how much I use YouTube for a lot of my aviation knowledge and learning, I went out to YouTube just to see what the Sky Air was about, what it looked like, how people flew it, and I came across a video that was on Able Flight. And
yeah.
Able Flight is an organization that makes aviation accessible to those people dealing with handicaps. And from there, I came across the website, ableflight.org. And from there, was pleased to make acquaintance with Charles Stites, the executive director of the show, and he agreed to come on to our show.
Yeah.
And he's going to be our guest tonight.
Absolutely. Well, we had an opportunity to talk with him over the phone for quite a bit, and it was kind of neat. I think we learned a lot more about Able Flight, and it'd be worthwhile for everybody to take a listen to our conversation.
Absolutely. So cleared for takeoff. Let's go on to the conversation with Charles Stites.
All right.
Well, it was in April of 2006. I read an article in a British magazine that I would occasionally write for, and the article was about a young woman who lost her leg in the terror bombings in London in 2005. There was a British organization called Flying Scholarships for the Disabled that had given her a scholarship to come to the States, train, and become a pilot to put her life back together. I thought that was a great human interest story that I could write about when I found out what organization was doing that here in the States. And after some research, found out that there wasn't.
Wow.
So I saw it as a missed opportunity as a writer, and then really a week later, one of those light bulb moments, I woke up one morning and told my wife, I know what I'm doing the rest of my life.
Nice. That's cool. That's really
and
cool.
And she said, that's good, and we'll never went back to sleep. I told her later that I realized that we had this wonderful convergence of things here in the United States. We had new sport pilot rule with the driver's license medical. We had LSAs at lower cost for people to use to get a license, like sport aircraft. And just in a wonderful coincidence, only a few weeks before at Sun and Fun, a friend had showed me a set of hand controls that would soon be installed in one of those LSAs, allowing people that didn't have use of their legs to fly the airplane entirely by hand. So I thought, man, this has all just come together beautifully. And I know all these people in aviation through my work as a writer for different magazines, and I've been doing that about, I guess, 10 or 12 years at the time. And I thought, this is perfect. So within a week, I had it incorporated. Within a month, 28 days from start to finish, we got our 501c3 status from the IRS. That's unheard of. And that was in the middle of 2006, and by the end of the year, we awarded our first scholarships, and by the first of 2007, we had our first people training.
Wow, and so with this epiphany, and I know what I want to do with the rest of my life, did that mean you gave up what other parts of things that were going on from a job perspective?
Well, I couldn't afford to do that then, and so what I did is I continued to write, and I had another career where I've been a video producer for 5 years, so I continued to do that to support getting the Able Flight off the ground, so to speak. Now I occasionally write for a few magazines like AOTA Pilot, but I really work on Able Flight all the time, and it's been that way for the last about 4 years.
And has it met your expectations in terms of your original thoughts of where this was going, or did you even have a longer-term plan of where you thought this would land and head?
Well, that's a great question, because, and actually, no one's ever asked that. You're the first.
A lot of people tell me that. It's not always a good thing, either.
Yikes.
Well, I, you know, I was pretty ambitious about it from the beginning, but I have to say it's gone in different directions than I thought it would, and there's been all these unexpected things. All good, but they've been unexpected. For example, you know, we'll talk in a little bit about the scholarships that we offer, but the career training, I really hadn't expected that. I look at this as a pilot for what learning to fly can do. Sense of you know, their self-confidence and their self-reliance, and just totally changing the life, changing perspective. But I hadn't really thought about the career aspects of it, and now we're really starting to focus on it quite a bit. I hadn't anticipated how many people would contact us, saying that I don't need your help, but I need your I don't need your financial help, but I need your information. And that's been a really pleasant surprise. But what that tells me is that there are a lot more people out there that, beyond the ones that we help directly, who are looking at this as an opportunity to get into aid. So those are two things. And I was not, I was pretty naive about where I thought the money could come from. And I don't mind speaking about that. Shortly, immediately after we got our 501c3 status, I was going to Oshkosh. And I told my wife, this is such a wonderful idea. I was so enthusiastic about it. I know all these people from my years in writing, these business people in aviation. I affectionately called them the low-hanging fruit and said, I'm going to pick some of that. And I'm going to come back with $25,000. Well, I came back with $500 and a new a promise of $500 and a new sense of what those challenges were going to be. I had a learning curve, and but now we're just doing great. We've got more people training than I really anticipated we would have at this time, and the program has grown every year. It survived the recession. It's a lot of nonprofits. I'm very pleased with it.
Excellent. Now, you alluded to scholarships, so I'm sure a lot of the people that come to you have a financial need. Talk to us a little bit about the scholarships that are available and where it stops and maybe the financial implications for those that maybe don't get the scholarship but want to take advantage of what Able Flight has to offer.
Sure. Well, let me say it from the beginning. We don't test in any way for financial need. We know that we've given scholarships to people who actually have decent income. It's never a part of what we do. We look for people that will be helped by the experience, and then we'll then help someone else.
Can I ask a quick question? What is the experience that you're hoping your students get? You know, that's, and have it be a positive, real, you know, very rewarding experience for themselves. What are some goals for that experience? What do you want them to feel and achieve?
Really, independence and the ability to meet a challenge. You know, and I've talked about from the beginning with Able Flight, I always use the word challenge. It's in our mission statement, which is challenge themselves through flight training
and by doing so to gain greater self-confidence and self-reliance. That's like part of it. But what I found out from almost every single student we've ever had is when they talk about it, they say freedom. And that's something that, you know, we're all pilots in this conversation, and a lot of people listening to the program are pilots, sure. And we all know about that. I mean, that's, we maybe don't verbalize it very often, but all of the able flight pilots, that's the word they choose. So what we're looking for, the goals, give people these skills that they've earned. Nothing, when I say give them, I shouldn't say that. They get to earn these skills. They meet these challenges. And they think about themselves differently. You know, when it comes to self-reliance, for example, I tell people that don't fly, I say, you're never going to be more self-reliant in your life than when you first solo an airplane.
Very true.
And then every time after that that you solo an airplane or your PIC. Because it's all on you at that moment. And so you take someone who maybe through an injury or an illness is in a position in their lives where lots of times people want to look after them, kind of hover over them, maybe even sometimes, you know, parents are just way too protective after an injury. I would be that way with my own children, so I understand. But then they're in an airplane, and they're totally on their own. That's a huge confidence builder. So what we're looking for is that's a stepping stone to other things in their life, whether it's aviation or not. Maybe it's a career. Maybe it's going on advancing their education. But we see it time after time that people are, you know, meeting these goals. And lots of times they'll come up with their own goals. And that's a wonderful surprise for them.
That's really neat. Do you find that a lot of these experiences that the able flight pilots get to realize and experience, do they take those lessons learned and you know, transfer them to their day-to-day lives? Do you ever find, do you hear any good success stories from that?
Yeah, I was actually going to touch on that later, but it's a good time to talk about it now. For example, you know, let's talk a little bit about Purdue pretty soon and what we do there. But one of the things that's happened is that when we send our students to places like Purdue, they see another side of life. We have, kind of jumping ahead to one of the stories I want to tell later, but we have a young man who went and trained there in 2011. He moved there. This is a young man who's been in a wheelchair all his life.
Wow.
He then moved to Purdue because of the experience he had there through Able Flight. He's now enrolled there as a full-time student in their aviation program, Department of Aviation.
That's cool.
That's really great.
We have two other young men. One used the wheelchair, one has cerebral palsy. One has completed training in an aviation program out of college, and the other one, and these are all licensed. The other one graduated from high school this spring and now is enrolled in an aviation program in Illinois. So those are just a couple of examples of how people have taken this, and those are the aviation side of it. But yes, people going out and getting jobs, it's sort of hard to define that, you know, what a sense of confidence means that leads to something else. You can, it's like art, I guess, you can see it.
Yeah.
You can see a change in the person, you know, that, I don't want to say that pilot swagger, but that sense of, I can do this. If I can fly an airplane, I can do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, that's...
Go ahead, Al, I'm sorry.
I just think that's just a wonderful, you know, testament to you know, I like the term pilot swagger, you know, and you know, it, how it can translate to so many different things and create that independence. And, you know, to be a student at a Big Ten university, I remember I was, and, you know, that was a pretty big challenge. And for an able flight pilot, I think that's got to be a really, really great feeling, you know, to be able to accomplish something like that, you know, and navigate through through a big university like that.
So. In learning and going through your website, I saw a picture of Jessica Cox, who, for those of the audience that aren't familiar,
been a lot of publicity about her. She was born without any arms, and she flies an air coupe. It puts on her headset. It puts on her contacts, everything with her feet. Was she involved in the Able Flight program?
Oh, yeah, she's one of our scholarship winners.
No
kidding. And, you know, I have a few people that I'd love to talk about. Actually, I'd love to talk about all of them, but in the interest of time, I kind of picked out thought about a few that I thought would be great to talk about. She's definitely one of them. I heard about Jessica through a friend who's on our advisory board, and he had seen an article on her when she was first attempting to learn to fly, and she had difficulty finding an airplane, an air coupe, that somebody would let her solo. And you know, that's a pretty big leap of faith for somebody to do that, someone like Jessica.
Right.
But she found out about us, and we talked, and she applied for a scholarship, and we thought, you know, well, this is exactly what our program's all about. Maybe it's an extreme case, because we were dealing primarily with people who couldn't use their legs, so had use of their hands. We were dealing with people that maybe had lost a limb through amputation, wounded veterans. But we worked with her for a while to try to find the right airplane, gave her the scholarship, and then just when we thought we had found an airplane, she found one. Found an instructor near her home in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
So we paid for her, I think her last 40 hours or so. And what a wonderful story that is. I mean, if anybody has seen those pictures or seen the video on YouTube, her name in there and you'll find it. You'll see someone who flies an airplane like she drives her car, like she does anything else. I've had the good fortune to, you know, be with Jessica a number of times at Air Venture and places like that. And there, we have a party there each year for our pilots and supporters. And she'll be there, and when Jessica's there and sitting there eating with you, you don't even notice after a while. It's just that natural. Her ability to fly is just like everything else she does. She just proves her ability. And that's what all of our people do. Her story, frankly, when I'm doing presentations about Able Flight, I don't usually tell it first because it kind of sucks the wind out of the room. And I want to make sure people understand how every one of our pilots is special, unique, and inspiring. Hers is just incredible. That story is amazing.
Yeah, you wonder how many people could actually accomplish that. Maybe there are lots, but it's like you say, you just kind of takes your breath away. The challenges and her attitude, for those who haven't seen it, again, I encourage everyone to go out to YouTube and search on Jessica Cox. I mean, she doesn't feel like a victim at all. This is her life, and she's going to make the most of it, and I suggest that she makes a lot more of it than many of the those that aren't dealing with disabilities.
And that's a great point, because we see that with a lot of our pilots, is that maybe they just life is a challenge on a daily basis, and so they're used to challenge, and they welcome it more than a lot of people who are more comfortable. Shortly after I started Able Flight, being a writer, I was wondering, you know, what are people saying about this organization? So I would Google it every now and then, and I came across a blog that this young flight instructor, a woman somewhere, was writing, and this was after our first two pilots were licensed. And she read about that, and she said, I don't want to hear any more whining from any of my students.
Exactly.
And so I think that kind of speaks to, you know, that they have to meet the same practical test standards as anybody else. We always tell the instructors, there are no breaks. If you give anybody a break, you're doing the harm, you know, because they need to meet the same standards. And yet they have to work harder. Maybe that work is getting in and out of the airplane. Maybe it's getting up a couple hours early in the morning that a paraplegic often needs to get ready for their day. And so it's harder work, but they have to meet the same standards, and so the rewards are there. And maybe in a sense, they just being used to a challenge, they make great students. That's what all the instructors say. They're just one of their best students they've ever had.
You know, you bring up a point you mentioned a little while ago about that most of this seems to be aimed at those that have lost use of their legs. And I have to confess, when I first saw Able Flight, I thought, okay, yeah, this is for people that need help with to replace a rudder pedal. And then I go on to do research on your site, which is ableflight.org, and start reading about students that are deaf and, you know, have the use of all their limbs, and it really expanded my mind. So is there a definition of disabled, or is something to educate me and our listeners about who qualifies for Able Flight and what kind of standard are they held against to qualify as a person with disability?
Well, that actually is a question that I get asked sometimes, and there's no really straightforward answer to that. But I, you know, people will call and say, would I qualify? And then, you know, we talk a little bit about their circumstance. Obviously, you know, you can see from our website that we've worked with paraplegics, quadriplegics, and I'll come back to that in a second, amputees, people with muscular dystrophy, cerebral palsy, and we have had two students now who are deaf, gotten their license. That's pretty typical of the ones we've awarded scholarships to, and that's a pretty broad range already. So, you know, I think loss of limb, limited motion in some capacity, those kind of things would all kind of be the classic definition. But then you look at someone like Jessica, you know, who was born without arms, and that presents, you know, challenges that we didn't see with any other student. And, you know, frankly, that was the challenge for her flight instructor. So that he had to figure out, and for Jessica to figure out how to make the airplane work, how to make, you know, just how to handle it. And so there is no clear-cut answer. If a person that feels like they would benefit from this and they feel, you know, they have a disability. Now, there are some, I guess, some standards for what qualifies as a disability when people go for assistance or things like that, but we don't look at any of that, just like we don't look at financial. We just look at their story. And this is a good time, I guess, to talk about the scholarships that we have.
Please.
We have four different ones, and within those four scholarships, you know, you'll see in the application there's a common factor, which is an essay, which they write about their life. They talk about how they feel like learning to fly would change their life. We also look at they give us a list of goals and two reference letters. And we always ask that one of those comes from someone very close to them. It can be a parent, spouse. And the reason for that is because they've known them over time and they've seen how their life has been affected by the injury or their illness. They're going to be biased and they're going to say, you know, try to say they're the best candidate ever. You should give them a scholarship. We know that. But it gives us insight into the person. It also gives us kind of a baseline for, you know, what we can see later after the experience. So it's a little more, you know, there's not any hard thing. We don't apply any kind of matrix to this, you know, where we say get 5 points for so-and-so. It's not that way at all. There's a scholarship committee that looks at the candidates. We choose certain ones for personal interviews, and then the committee looks at the results of that and makes decisions.
And do the scholarships, are they either all or nothing, or are they partial where there's some kind of dollars toward their pilot license?
Sure. The way this works is there are four scholarships. They're what we call the full scholarship or just the Able Flight scholarship, and that was our first one. And that's we pay for flight training, and all this is for the sport pilot certificate, flight training, ground training, travel and lodging as required, because we want people to train on an intensive basis. So before the Purdue experience, we actually sent people to live in hotels for 4 or 5 weeks here in airport. So they would, and we pay all of that. We pay for their testing, their books, and their manuals. And typically, it's always been close to, you know, somewhere around $8,000 a person. And then now with Purdue, they go live in university housing and everything. Of course, we're paying for the airplane. That's the full scholarship. That's intended to get someone to a sport pilot certificate. If they want to go on to private after that, they can do it on their own. that they will have accomplished about 60 to 70-some percent of the work required for the private certificate at that time. So we have had several that have decided to do that on their own. There are medical concerns, you know, medical certification concerns about that. That's a whole other topic. So, and then we have a scholarship called Return to Flight for people who are already licensed and then became, you know, were injured and can go back to flying with an adapted airplane. We've had several people take advantage of that. That's a wonderful one because that's a quick turnaround. We had an airline pilot, and he's an A-10 pilot also in the Air Force. I think he's a 10,000-hour ATP. Broke his neck water skiing. And a really young man, actually. And we got him back in an airplane in Atlanta with the hand controls, and in 5 hours he was checked out, and he can go rent the airplane and go flying.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's a scholarship I really like a lot, Return to Flight, because the turnaround is so great, it doesn't cost much for us to fund it. We have one called Flight Training Challenge, and that is, we use that in a couple of different ways. That's for people who are maybe not ready to go on for the full flight training, but would benefit from up to 10 hours of dual. And so they're not necessarily going to be PIC. And so these are kind of borderline cases. Now, we've had one of those, which turned out to be a really good success story. They probably did his 10 hours. The flight instructor called us and said, and he was close to solo, why don't you guys give him some more support? So we authorized another 10 hours. He soloed and started his cross-country work. Another 10 hours, he got ready for his check ride, and he eventually passed his check. So that was, it helped kind of qualify. You know, that was one of those cases we looked at and thought, you know, not ready for the full one. But as it turns out, he was right. We were wrong. So and we kept supporting him. And now our career training scholarships, we just started awarding those in the last year or so, and that's wonderful because what we provide is money that can be used for academic purposes. For example, the young man that I mentioned, we trained at Purdue in 2011, is now a student there. We just awarded him money for his academic program. We had a young woman recently who was one of our, who was our first woman pilot to get a certificate, also named Jessica. Her name's Jessica Charlet. And Jessica is an able flight pilot. Then she became a ground school, advanced ground school instructor on her own. And then recently she wanted to have a career in aviation, so she enrolled in a school to become an airline dispatcher.
Oh, very neat.
And that's a tough program, by the way. People don't know it's equivalent of being an ATP in terms of the groundwork. And so we gave her half the money that she needed to pay for that entire program, and another nonprofit gave her the other half. And she passed the test recently, and I'm very happy to say that she's been hired by an airline and is starting training next week for a full-time job. This is a young woman with a disability who'll have a career in aviation. So we're expanding that program, that career training. So those are our four scholarships.
And what's interesting to me is the fact that you know, this is so far-reaching and has grown so much. I guess one of the things that I have to imagine, though, there's probably a lot more need than money. So do you guys then just become a resource for someone that doesn't earn a scholarship? Or how do you handle those? Do you just say, hey, there's no more dollars left?
Yeah, you know, it's always a tough one. I have this wonderful part of my work where I get to call somebody up and tell them they've received a scholarship. And then I have the other side of that coin where I have to call someone and or write them and tell them that they did not. And I always encourage them to look for other avenues and actually suggest places. For example, if it's a woman, I send them to Women in Aviation. Tell them, you know, become a member of that organization. It's a very good organization. They award a lot more scholarship money than we do. And so they may be able to do that. As a matter of fact, Women in Aviation and Able Flight have partnered on the scholarship right now. So, but the, we, you know, it's tough. Well, what I say is that, you know, some people, if they don't have a financial need, they just need, you know, to know where can I go, who could train me, and that depends on what their circumstances are. What what they need as an individual. Not everybody needs hand controls in it. And not everybody needs, whatever their needs are. We pretty much by this point are starting to discover that we know the answers. You know, we can send them to the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing is when a person is initially denied a scholarship, well, the very first thing that I like to ask them is, would you like for us to keep you in the queue? You know, we'll consider you for the next 6 months or a year. And we have actually had, I think, two people that we have gone back and awarded scholarships that were initially turned down the first time.
Oh, nice.
Keep that application active. Then we ask them to update us with any new status information. There are some people who we would like to award a scholarship to, but their schedule will not allow them to get away for that long, and mm-hmm. that's unfortunate. But we feel like the intensive training works best, and I think our success rate, which is around 80%, as opposed to the 30% of other people who start to learn to fly.
That's a pretty amazing statistic in and of itself.
It is, and I'm always... we're not dealing with huge numbers, but after, you know, we're in our sixth year of training, I guess, coming up pretty soon, and it's consistent. There are a lot of reasons for that. We do a lot of vetting of people, but we also have a lot of mentoring that goes on, a lot of support. And, of course, they're getting funding, which makes a difference for a lot of people. But I think the real reason is you get highly motivated people, you give them the right circumstance in which to train, good instructors. And they're key to this whole instructorship. Just incredibly valuable. With all those things come together, and I think that accounts for the
right. Sure, and I know I'm thinking here, Al's probably trying to get a question, and I'm dominating the questioning, but I'm totally engrossed in this.
You're asking good questions.
Oh, good. Sometimes they haven't even been asked before, but that's besides the point. Between the FBOs, the flight schools, the instructors do some, you know, hit that soft spot, and they put aside normal rates, if you will, and say, you know what, this is important, I want to donate my time, or I want to donate part of an airplane to this, and that they work with you to stretch your dollars even further?
We've had a few cases of that, and they're always very welcome, and frankly, I do my best to drive a really hard bargain with people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've always been really happy to ask for things, because the worst they can say is no, you know, and
right.
then we're paying their normal rate. But the other side of that is we do pay pretty close to normal rates for almost everything, everywhere. We occasionally get small discounts. We've had a few volunteers, especially early on when we didn't have much to work with. But the one thing that I'm really proud of is that the funds that we get from the different sponsors and supporters, we're plowing thousands and thousands of dollars back into the aviation community and the aviation economy every year. You know, last year, just at the airplanes we rented for Purdue was over 240 hours in 5-6 weeks that we paid rental on airplanes for. And those are typically going to small training operations. And that's just, me, that's wonderful. You know, we're putting that money back in the aviation community. Flight instructors are getting paid. We're buying fuel from FBOs. Testing fees are being paid. And we do get some help, some in-kind donations. For example, our friends at King Schools have been donating a complete training package to every student from the beginning. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. And that's not their cheap package. That's their, I don't know, $400 or $500 package every time. When people get a license, our friends at Sennheiser give them a headset that they can use to fly. Things like that. At Purdue, we work with Purdue. We provide the airplanes. We pay the travel costs. Purdue provides the instructors and provides housing. So there are places where we can economize, but we like being able to send that money back in to help support general aviation.
That's terrific. And as the three of us know and everyone listening here, it's exactly what the industry needs.
Yeah, it's
yeah, I wish we were bigger. I wish we were twice as big and helping twice as much, but I'm proud of what we do already.
Yeah.
And we are growing.
Absolutely. I think that's just so refreshing to hear. You know, I'm actually, you know, I'm very, very touched by it to hear all this. And, you know, I'm asking myself, what can I do to help give back and help people achieve, you know, that sense of freedom. And I'm actually very curious about this from a flight training standpoint. You know, I'm in addition to being, you know, flying professionally as a full-time job, I'm very active in the flight training side of things. And I think that there's a lot of something that you guys do, and I want to talk to you a little bit more about this. But from the flight training side of things, you know, how do you take ownership of your students' goals? I'm sure that each one of them has something that's, you know, their goal is different from each one. But you know, how do you take ownership of the students' goals and pair them up with an instructor that can help them achieve those goals and aviation dreams?
Well, that is kind of the crux of the whole instructor-student able flight relationship. And we've been really pretty successful with it, and I think sometimes it's just been luck. But the locations that have had, it kind of grew out of the locations that had the adapted airplanes to begin with. One of those locations is in Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, at Cobb County Airport, and it's a company called Hansen Air Group. And they actually import and sell the Sky Arrow 600, which was the first LSA with hand control. Really wonderful installation. We have a video on our website. I encourage people to go to the gallery section at ableflight.org, click on the videos, and then click on the Flying with Hand Controls video and watch that. It's just, you'll see how elegant that solution is. And that's the one that I heard about in 2006. Actually, it kind of helped me the idea that it would all work. But so we started working with them, and the first instructors there were a couple of volunteers, and they were airline pilots. And they worked with our first student.
Oh, that's great.
Then we started paying the third instructor, then the fourth. But they actually set up flight training just for Able Flight. They were selling airplanes. They weren't doing any flight training. But John Hansen and his brother Ron, two fellows who are now, I guess, in their 70s, twins, long time pilots, they really believed in this. And they decided to set up training, so they got their insurance. They did everything that needed to be done. And our very first student that was licensed there. And so those first instructors, we started to see in people, you know, this desire to be a part of this, this understanding that they could have an impact on a person's life. But the instructor-student relationship, I've always thought is so amazing. The mutual trust going back and forth and that kind of thing. And we saw that in these first instructors. It really helped us looking at other people later. And so that's something we've always looked at. We have an instructor on our board of directors, and he gets involved in talking to the instructors and the flight schools. That's his area of expertise. So I ask him to do that. And so he does a lot of that kind of qualifying. When we established the program at Purdue, these are Purdue graduate students who are instructors. And that has been wonderful. I mean, I could talk an entire hour just about what we do at Purdue. And I do want to give them so much credit because we just finished our third year there. We sent two in 2010, four students in 2011, and six students this year. We have 100% success rate. The grad school, the grad students bid for the job to be an able flight instructor now, which means that sometimes they're paying up. I mean, they're passing up some paid work otherwise, other places that maybe they would have gotten more money, although they, you know, they do get paid for this. But they love it. And, I was up there this summer while they were training the students. And to a person, they were thanking me for the opportunity. And, you know, obviously I want to thank them. So that you look for someone that can relate to the student, to think about what that student's goals are, you know, what are they trying to accomplish.
give them the skills that any instructor would give any student. As I said earlier, not to give them a break in any way, but to find that extra little bit of adaptation. There may be a very simple thing. Maybe you need a Velcro on a glove and Velcro on a stick so that their arm won't get as tired, that kind of thing. You know, they can help them with a few things, like they can help them get in and out of the airplane. But being sensitive to, you know, how to teach that person, that's what any good instructor needs with any student, and that's no different than working with anybody else. It's just that they need to be thinking about, answer your question, I'm sorry, I went around a long way to get there. But
yeah, no, that's a great answer.
About, you know, how can I change, help this person change themselves?
Right.
And it does so much, you know, just as I'm thinking through, and if you've listened to any of our shows, sometimes Al and I talk about good CFI and bad CFI. And this makes me feel good about the good CFI, especially young people at the university that are, again, thanking you for the opportunity. Obviously, they have a charitable heart and a sense of how blessed you, people are without the disabilities, how lucky we are, I guess you could say, and then this need to give back. I don't know, it's just a feel-good story just to hear you talk about it.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that whole instructor-student relationship is critical, but it goes beyond the time spent in the airplane, especially at Purdue, really at everywhere else. Most of our training we now are doing at Purdue each year, the bulk of our training, and we're going to keep growing that. They love it. They want us coming back every year. They recently modified one of their buildings to make it more accessible, which I think is so cool that they did that on their own, building at the airport. They're even, and I'm not saying anything that's not public here, they're even looking at purchasing an LSA, and they've told the manufacturers who've been showing them the LSAs that we won't buy it unless it has adaptive control. So that's the way they see the program. But the students there, you know, our students will fly there twice a day often, and then they'll go to ground school class, regular class in between. So it's a full day. It's intensive training. Nothing easy about it. But because their ages are often so close to that of the instructors, there's just a lot of friendship and a lot of hanging out.
Yeah, just hopefully not a lot of drinking before they go flying.
No, we have very strict rules about that. So what happens is that friendships are created, and people are staying in touch now. At 2 years after the first one, these people still stay in touch. There's a mutual respect and friendship, and I think the instructors will tell you that they are being taught something every day themselves.
Well, I'm sure.
So about determination and willpower, and willingness, ability to meet a challenge.
Yeah, and I, again, just as we've said throughout the conversation, I encourage people that are listening to this to head out to ableflight.org, because I saw the Purdue University video, and I was impressed, and again, not only the students, but the director there, and their commitment to ableflight, and to the more important, to these people dealing with disabilities that have the same aspirations in aviation, and really are part of our all aviation family, just as everyone else is.
Yeah, I love it when people come to our website and go to that section called Meet Scholarship Winners or watch the videos, you know, read those stories, because these stories tell themselves. They're very powerful. And my favorite time to talk about ableflight or to be somewhere when people want to learn about ableflight is when we have one of our pilots with me. And I can just step off in the background and let them tell their story, because that's the real story. That's what ableflight really is. It's the people who are pilots and go on to careers as flight instructors. And I would be remiss if I didn't say it's sponsors and supporters, because all of this doesn't happen just because it's a nice thing. So if I may, I'd love to mention some of the people that have, from the beginning, made this possible.
Please.
And people are sometimes surprised to learn that the majority of our funding comes from not directly from what most people think of as general aviation, and not really from individuals. We don't get as many individual donations as you might think. It doesn't come from too many grants. It comes from sponsorships from business aviation, from the larger, you know, the corporate side of aviation. Companies like Bombardier and Jet Aviation, Corona Aerospace, they were our first sponsors, our founding sponsors, and they've been with us from the beginning. Universal Weather and Aviation, Sennheiser, Embraer, Landmark Aviation. These are all people kind of on that higher end. And I even sometimes ask myself, why are they supporting AbleFlight? I know how it initially happened through some introduction, but it's just because I think there really are people, individuals within these large corporations whose heart is in the right place, and not a huge amount of money for each of them each time, but it's a huge amount for AbleFlight, and it's a life-changing amount for the people that we use and we help with that money. So these people are, they've been the backbone of support. Now, we do get a few grants, like we've had a few for Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. Mm-hmm. Christopher Reeve was an accomplished pilot. A lot of people don't know that.
No, I didn't.
He flew for quite a few years, owned a number of airplanes, had a couple of solo transatlantic crossings, was a glider pilot, diamond-level glider pilot. And so they've, you know, I've written some proposals that have been funded through them. We've gotten a few other grants, very few. So, you know, these sponsors, each one of them is valuable, and I hope that anybody listens has a chance to patronize any of them. Please tell them thank you for supporting AbleFlight. It makes a difference. And they know this. I selfishly invite them to events, make them meet our pilots, and then I've got them hooked.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great.
They know what I'm doing when I do that, too.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, it's good to know the rules and all the things going on, but like you say, it's just a feel-good moment for everyone involved, I'm sure.
A lot of crying.
Yeah.
A lot of, but, you know, I can't tell you how many times moms and dads have looked at their children, and this one of them I can think of in particular, who's our very first pilot, and if we have enough time, I can tell his story very quickly.
Please, go ahead.
Absolutely.
His name is Brad Jones, and he's from Georgia, from a little tiny town in Georgia. And Brad was a college student driving to work, had a sandwich on the seat of his truck that fell off. He reached over for it, truck ended up rolling over, he became paralyzed. He was an athlete, but he was a college student with a job. Nice young man, very super polite. And so at one point, his parents get that call that all of us would hate to get. And then they go to a hospital, and they see this young man, this vibrant young man, now on a bed, and a doctor says, paralyzed for life. 6 months later, I interviewed him for a scholarship. I actually flew to Georgia myself and interviewed him, because he's one of the first ones. He's actually the very first one we awarded a scholarship. We awarded the scholarship. A few months later, he started training, and almost a year to the day from his accident, solo.
How cool.
Wow.
And within a couple of weeks after that, he was moving along so quickly, and he trained at Cobb County there at Hanson Air Group. A couple of weeks later, he passed his check ride. He was our first. I got a call from a friend at that airport who said, you need to get down here. Brad is going for his check ride today. And I was actually at a convention for owners of the kind of airplane that I fly, an old airplane. And I was about 300 miles away. And so I hopped in the airplane, left the convention, flew to Atlanta, hid my airplane so he wouldn't see it because he had seen it before. So it wouldn't, you know, make him nervous that I was there. And when he and the examiner taxied back in, I had one of the best moments, you know, I've had in my life. Who really had it were those parents that were standing, who also kind of snuck in that he didn't know, and saw their son taxi in as a licensed pilot, a son that had been, you know, paralyzed a year ago. So these are, you know, it's life-changing. It is just an amazing thing that happened. And so everyone who helps us out, they have some ownership of that, and that's part of their legacy. When people give a donation, when they support us, that's their legacy. that they get to see this, you know, to know it, that they've made that difference in someone's life. Now, there's another way that people can help. It has nothing to do with giving money. And that is, you might know somebody that could benefit from our program. You might know a person who is expressing interest in learning to fly. You might know a wounded veteran. And send them to our website. So talk to them about flying. Then send them to our website, to the scholarships page, frequently asked questions, questions page, and let them learn about what it is we do. And if they're really serious and they want to give this a try, then they fill out an application, send it in, and we'll consider them. And that's a way that you can help that doesn't have any dollars attached to it at all. And that's very important. And that's the way a lot of our applications come, because somebody hears about Able Flight and knows that they have a relative or son or daughter of someone they know that would be a good candidate. So they let them know. And next thing, 6 months later, a year later, they're a licensed pilot.
Amazing. Yeah, you know, that's one thing we've talked about in the past. I talk about it in terms of inside the fence or outside the fence. I think our pilot community and just aviation community, even the people that are aviation fanatics, but maybe not a pilot yet, we have them in our flying club that Al and I are part of. We do a great job of communicating with each other, but I think we do a poor job of communicating with people that haven't figured out how to get inside the fence yet. And, you know, so to your point, people know people that maybe have talked about airplanes, but they see that they're wheelchair-bound, or I shouldn't say wheelchair, that are, you know, I forget the politically correct way to reference
the person who uses a wheelchair.
Thank you. Or other challenges they face that maybe didn't allow someone to make the connection. Hopefully now they can say, yeah, there's something that could do real positive for not only the industry, but most important for a person that is just looking for that one little positive that this can provide.
Yeah, we do a lot of preaching to the choir, that's for sure. And, you know, we go to our EA chapter meetings or our club meetings and stuff, and we pat ourselves on the back for our accomplishments and our keeping general aviation going and everything. And those are very valid reasons for patting yourself on the back.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can, you know, get that person, as you said, from outside the fence on the other side and give them the experience, and in this case, people that really might not have thought they ever had an opportunity, then you've gone the extra mile.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Give me some thoughts, Al, about, you know, we're talking about how do we get to the high schools or young people and help ignite that spark about aviation. This just gives us another group to include in that conversation and that outreach.
Definitely. One thing that really struck me, and, you know, this is the relationship that Able Flight has with Purdue. Going through a university program like that myself, and you know, specifically, you know, I went to the University of Illinois, and that's only, you know, 35, 40, 50 miles away, and, you know, so we're pretty well in touch with them. But one thing that really struck out to me on the YouTube videos on ableflight.org was that Purdue's, you know, effort to outreach to high school juniors and seniors, and try to get them involved. And I thought that was really, really kind of neat, because, you know, Mark and I are really trying to figure out different ways how to outreach, you know, being on the airport side of the fence, how to get to the people on the, you know, the land side of the fence and get them in to experience aviation. So, you know, I'm kind of curious, do you know of anything that Purdue is doing to, you know, specifically reach out to, you know, people in high school?
Well, I actually don't know of any formal programs. I know that the professor that I work with there, the fellow who appears in that video, who's just an outstanding advocate for Able Flight and what we do, and for bringing people with disabilities into their programs. As a matter of fact, he has set a goal of bringing something like 5 or 6% of not just Able Flight when we're there for those 5 weeks, but year-round.
Oh, wow.
And that's such a stretch goal, so ambitious, but that's been the experience they've had. So as to a formal outreach that they've had, I know that they're, they've talked to guidance counselors and people like that, and so have we. You know, I really, really, really wanted to get that student from Indiana to go to, you know, the person with a disability who's a high school student in Indiana to, be one of the ones we send to Purdue, because I think that would be so cool. You know, their own school, and it would also provide a smoother pathway if they want to enroll there later as an in-state student. So I did some outreach with high school guidance counselors, and so far that hasn't paid off. We had a young man from Illinois this year who went to Purdue, got his license, and now he's back in Illinois going to school.
Great.
We had the other young man who came from Virginia, went to Purdue, and then moved to Indiana, spent a year at a community college, establishing his residency, and now he's a full-time student there. So that's one of the things we want to do is, you know, keep trying to feed people that want to have a career in aviation, feed people into the program there because it's such a good program. And I would love to see that replicated at other places, and there's no reason why it couldn't be. You do need someone like the professor there, and I'd like to say his name is Bernie Woolley, because Bernie is such a strong advocate that he keeps it alive. Well, he kept it alive that first year into the second year, and then now it's just taken a whole life of its own. I mean, the people up there, they're very proud of what they do, and deservedly so. So if we could, yeah, reaching out to high schools and maybe using these stories is such a good way to do it, because I hear it all the time. If a person that uses a chair or a person that's lost their legs or a person without arms can do it, sure, I could do it. Maybe, you know, high school kids look at that as an example of an accomplishment that they're more than up to for themselves.
Sure. Actually, I want to take this thread a little bit longer or further is the universities you're mentioning, I think in Chicagoland of Lewis University or Western Michigan or UND, all these people that are known for aviation. What about just flight schools that are wanting to get involved in this? Is there an opportunity for them to partner with Able Flight, to say, you know, local airport flight school that is willing to make some kind of commitment on the right kind of airplane with the right kind of controls? How would they...
Yeah, let me tell you an absolutely wonderful story there. Before we actually had people going to Purdue, we were working with folks in Atlanta, which I mentioned. Our second person to get a license is a remarkable young man named Sean O'Donnell. And when you see that video of the airplane being flown using hand controls, that's Sean that you'll see. Sean got his license in 2007. And... in an attempt to get some publicity for Able Flight, I found a way that Sean could learn to fly at an Oshkosh in the month before Air Venture started. And so we found a place for him to stay up there. We actually sent two students. One was a wounded veteran who had health problems and had to leave for a while, and then came back and finished at another location later and got his license. But Sean stayed up there and flew a Sky-Aero, an adapted Sky-Aero, took his check ride on opening day of Air Venture at another airport, of course. And so
that would have been a heck of a check ride.
Yeah, on opening day of Air Venture was the newest sport pilot in the United States.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that was so cool, right? And so we got the publicity, which is what I'd hoped for. Within a week, Sean bought one of the adapted Sky-Aero and opened his own flight school.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
And... you know, he works with instructors there. He hires instructors. He actually leases it back now to an FBO, exactly what you're talking about, flight school in Wilmington, Delaware. It's Aeroways at the Newcastle Airport. And so since 2000 and, I guess, late 2007 or early 2008, we've been paying him for the use of his airplane. And it's one of the airplanes that goes to Purdue every summer. So 7, 8, or 9, I've lost count now, other students have been licensed in Sean's airplane. So there are opportunities for people. That was an extraordinary move on his part, and he made that investment. The airplane pays for itself. As a matter of fact, I don't think he'd mind me saying this. What he and Aeroways, the lease back, got out of the airplane in the 6 weeks that was in Indiana this summer, almost paid for the entire year of cost there.
Wow.
So there are opportunities. Obviously, Purdue works so well for us that we're still going to do the vast majority of our training there. But we have had people train at other locations. We had a wounded vet train in Frederick, Maryland this year and got his license. Great story. A Marine sergeant lost one arm at the shoulder, lost one leg below the knee. He trained in a flight design CT that we leased from a company in Massachusetts, and they sent it to Frederick, and it lived there in Frederick. And the reason for that is that he could not get away to Purdue. He was such a wonderful candidate, we wanted to give him the opportunity. He went right through and got his license. And he'll be a keynote speaker at AOPA Summit next week, or in about a week or so, California, where he's being recognized for his accomplishments. So we do still work with FBOs, although on a much more limited basis. There are more airplanes available now with hand control. Flight Design has now created hand controls for their LSA. And there are a couple of those in the United States. There are four or five of the Skyros with hand controls. There's another company that's doing it. And but there are opportunities out there if people are willing to make the investment.
And the adaptive controls don't have to come in an LSA, right? It could be a Sky Arrow 650 if it was ordered that way, as I think I heard from you.
Well, the Sky Arrow 600 is the LSA. The 650 was a certified Sky Arrow. And, yes, you could get the hand controls in it. They have to be put in at the factory in Italy. But for us, the LSA is the obvious choice because people can use the driver's license.
Oh, of course.
At a lower cost. You can use the Sky Arrow, an LSA, to go in and get your private license. Sean O'Donnell did that in his own airplane. He got his private. You can get a private in an LSA. And so there, the flight schools, what I tell them is they say, well, people call me and I'm interested in doing this. Love what you guys are doing. I said, don't count on us sending you a lot of students. We don't have the kind of money that, you know, allows us to you know, send a school enough students to pay their bills for most of them. You know, a couple of them are fortunate because we rent those airplanes a lot. But I say, but what you will have is an airplane that can be used for a person with a disability, without a disability. And a lot, and we've proven that these particular airplanes are good trainers because they've held up under the rigors of flight testing, flight training. And the Skyro is kind of unique in that you can reconfigure it in 3 seconds. That's not an exaggeration. You can actually take the extra stick in and out in flight.
Wow.
So, and that's so cool. Do watch that video because it's really neat. And so it works for the flight school for either student. And I tell them that, you know, maybe we'll send you some students, but maybe you can find your own students, people that don't need our scholarships, that you can train, like those people that call me and say, I don't need your money, but I do need to know where I can go. And so those people are out there, and as more people learn about Able Flight, more of those people find out that they can learn to fly, and like they just leave the scholarships to other people that need support more, or they just decide they don't want to, you know, fly, they'll just pay for it themselves anyway. They just need a flight school.
Absolutely. That's very, very cool. So, again, best way to find out more is ableflight.org.
Mm-hmm.
And what about email or phone number?
Sure. People can email at info@ableflight.org. What I prefer when people are making their kind of initial look at this thing is go to the website, download the scholarship application form. The instructions are on the form. Look at the frequently asked questions page. It really does answer almost all their questions. And I do the website myself. I put a lot of effort to it. I hope that people go take advantage of that. If there's a question they can't answer, then they can call, and the number is on the website, where they can call in, and you know, I'll try to answer the question. The people who want to help, they can donate directly on the site, any amount. We'd love to see a $5 donation. I mean that really as much as we like the $500 donation, because it comes from a person's heart.
Right.
It means something. They want to make a $5 a month. If they want to buy 1 gallon of Avgas a month for us, $5 or $6 or whatever, a donation per month is a way to do that on a recurring basis. And then, of course, if they want to recommend Table Flight to someone that benefits from the program, we really, really welcome that. That's the best way, is that person-to-person contact, that advocacy of learning to fly, what it would bring to their lives. Coming from a pilot, another pilot passionate about it, that's always important.
Definitely. It's one thing we all share, right, this passion. And it's the thing that keeps me excited as I run into other pilots. And like you say, it's maybe a group that not all of us think about all the time, and yet very deserving of the effort to reach out and make sure the family gets stronger together.
Well, Mark and Al, I really want to thank both of you for, you know, having a platform, this program that you have, where you're promoting aviation, and specifically for giving me an opportunity to do something which I love, which is talk about Able Flight, which means I'm talking about the individuals who've been successful in using aviation to change their own lives. It's really positive, fulfilling way. So, I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Absolutely.
And I know it's people. Yeah, and certainly we thank you for taking the time, and thank you for the effort that's obviously been a commitment and your dedication to it since 2006. It's obviously paying off for a lot of people, and hopefully we can be part of its growth.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Charles. Very much, Charles. That's absolutely great, and you know, I want to get my thank you in real quick, just to make sure that it's heard, because I think this show is all about finding amazing people doing amazing things in aviation, and holy smokes, you have just
hokey smokes, Bullwinkle.
Yeah, seriously, I mean this is so moving. Mark called me it was on Sunday. I'm sorry, but Mark looked like a young boy on Christmas morning all day long, because after he read through Able Flight's website, and you know, I definitely applaud everything you're doing to help the pilot population, help aviation, and grow this. This is just absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you guys. Again, I'm really serious. I appreciate the opportunity. And
wow, wasn't that a nice conversation with Charles Stites there?
Yeah, every time we hear about things like this, or in everyday life, there's things that always add perspective. This is one of those times, right, that gives you a whole different perspective on our current position and our functioning arms and legs and everything, how lucky we are. But it's so nice to see these people take on challenges and the strength of their character and discipline. I just think it's awesome. To me, that's an interview that in many respects is life-changing.
Absolutely. So for more information, feel free to check out ableflight.org. You can make a donation. In fact, I was so moved by our conversation with Charles. I set up a monthly donation. I decided to be, you know, it's not a big amount, but hopefully it buys not just one, but maybe 2 or 3 gallons of Avgas per month for him.
Well, it depends on if it's in Lake County, Illinois, or Cook County, Illinois. But
Well, hopefully they're buying their gas in Indiana at Purdue, and that's a hopefully it's a little bit cheaper down there.
And as we heard from Charles, it's not only the financial donation, but the effort, if you will, or just letting people know about the organization. Reach out to more funding sources, or reach out to more people that could take advantage of the wonderful services they provide.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing I want to do from it is get more involved in reaching out to people with disabilities in our local community, not only to tell them about Able Flight, but to get them involved with the local flying club, get them into this aviation community, as we've talked about the inside versus the outside,
yeah,
the fence, and make them a part of the inside the fence, because aren't we trying to grow the aviation community?
Yeah.
And isn't this just a source of people that have and share the same passion that we haven't had an opportunity, or we haven't taken the opportunity to reach out to in the past?
Absolutely. And I think that there's another point here that needs to be said, and this is a kind of a feel good type of thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just remember your reaction when you first discovered Able Flight, and you went through all of it, and it was just, you were just like happy as a clam. You were so excited. And I think, after talking to Charles and reading more about it, I'm just as excited. I think there's a lot of potential, and I just actually made a new blog article, or wrote a new blog article about the things that logbooks can't fit.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of them. And I kind of touch upon the relationships. You know, the more flight, a good way of judging flying experiences by relationships, you know, making good friends on flights and stuff like that, rather than just saying, hey, you flew from point A to point B. Talk about the friendship you made, and talk about some pretty cool friendships that you could have.
You know, there's a video on the EAA site around Oshkosh, and it's like a 17-minute video, and I already forget. It's funny, I've listened to it 100 times. I'm embarrassed. I don't remember the name of the video, but it's about the Oshkosh experience, if you will. And I'm always moved by the comments by people saying, hey, I've been coming for years, and it's all about the relationship. And it is much more than the airplanes. It's about the people that share our love of airplanes and the relationships that form, and how strong those relationships are.
Absolutely. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. But we'll be happy to share any more information or updates that ableflight.org posts, and we're going to share that with you on upcoming shows and things like that. So we'll definitely stay in touch with all that. But I think it's time for one of our coolest parts of the show, just after this.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on Athanalive Internet Radio. www.athanalive.com.
You know what that means.
I do. This is kind of our approach to landing phase of the show.
Open up the hangar doors.
Here we come.
We're coming in.
Yeah, hangar talk. Now, it's amazing wherever you go, people talk about hangar flying. And whether you have a license or not, whether you fly a lot or not, people make hangar flying part of their aviation life.
Yeah.
And it's something we all share as well. So, yeah, it's just fun to sit down and chat one-on-one, one-on-two, many on money.
Yeah.
About it. So what kind of thoughts do you have to kick us off this evening?
Well, we're not at our usual location at the KPWK airport, but we're under an old fix going into O'Hare. The final approach fix for 3-2 left.
Yeah.
This fix was one of the busiest fixes going into O'Hare, and that's Jockey.
And so is that why I see this huge antenna on top of the house?
Yeah. Ham radio. No. It was the busiest fix, and it was the final approach fix for the ILS to runway 3-2 left at O'Hare.
Oh, no kidding. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And did you grow up in this area here?
Yeah.
So
I
you
sure did.
So you were seeing lots of the bottoms of airplanes.
Lots of the bottoms of airplanes, and I remember my dad and I sitting out in the backyard, and you just could look up. We would lay in the backyard and just look up, and this was the final approach fix, which meant this is where the wheels came down.
Oh, my goodness.
So you could see 7-4s, maybe, 1,500 feet above the house, then gear down. It was pretty cool.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah.
Did you take any VHS or whatever people were using back then to the experience?
We live by the thought of leave only footsteps and take only memories.
Ah.
Or take pictures only. I don't know.
I know what you mean. No,
like that.
I know a lot of people that actually live by a similar credo.
Yeah. Which now is not the case. I'm taking a lot of pictures and things like that while flying, and I think it's kind of neat to share all the experiences.
Well, I finally took the dive, and I've grown tired of my old non-photo BlackBerry.
All right.
So I ordered an iPhone 5 because I use the iPad, and I use the iPad because I use 4Flight. And so I think I'm going to get into it as well, start to do some new things once you get the tool that allows it.
Absolutely. There's some cool things. I think you'll like it. Spark Reel is going to be a lot easier for you. You could take videos right on your phone, high-quality pictures, tweet. And I'm expecting your tweeting to, triple.
once you get your iPhone.
Well, you better hope for a lot more than triple.
Is it 100-fold, maybe?
Something like that, yeah. No, yeah. I actually plan to, just because, again, of this community that I've discovered, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I have something, though. You mentioned the fix. Here's a little piece of news that I have to confirm exactly, but into Pewaukee, the final approach fix was Cutie, right?
Cutie.
And now it's Pammy.
Pammy.
Or Pam, some call it, but I think it's Pammy.
I call it Pammy.
Yeah, I think 90% of us. But I'm a North Up kind of guy, and I know you're probably a Track Up kind of guy.
I could go either way.
I heard that about you.
Wow, not that way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little early to start with
wow.
that. But jeez. The antenna currently sits on top of Stevenson High School is what I heard.
I believe that.
And because it's not, doesn't have, there's something about access to it that the rules have changed, so they're going to have to move that.
Are you serious?
I am serious, and I probably am doing it injustice by only having an incomplete story here, but there was some problem with the antenna being on top of a building that didn't have the proper safety fence, or it had a safety fence and people can't get to it, that it's going to somehow have to change, be decommissioned and moved to a new place or something is what I heard.
Do you think they're going to rename the fix?
Well, I think, I don't know, because they've already renamed it from Cutie to Pammy, and I know there's a story behind the Pammy.
Yeah.
Actually, the Cutie, there was a story, because in the past, it must have been in a slightly different place. It was actually, how do I say this? A building that had some interesting things going on in it, and the pilots named it Cutie for representing that building.
Nice.
Yeah, back in the old days, with that place has since been torn down. And then it became Pammy relatively recently, but don't know.
Well, so there's a there's some pretty interesting stories behind, you know, different fixes and stuff like that. So this is we grew up under Jockey.
Right.
What do you think that represented?
Obviously something with horse races, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you got it. There was a...
thank God for my University of Iowa education.
Yeah, well, it came into good use, and I'm glad you used your degree with all of its distinctions and rights.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but no, they had a... we're right near Maywood Park.
Uh-huh, I remember hearing about Maywood and Balmoral,
A
lot of the racetracks down south side of, if you will.
Yeah,
south
absolutely.
South and southwest.
But some of my other favorite fix, my absolute all-time favorite, is going into Kansas City, and you shoot the ILS one right into Kansas City International, Mike Charlie India. And you fly in, and the fixes are like spicy barbecue turkey smoke ribs.
Yeah. Actually, what is it in Providence? Or was it somewhere up in the Northeast? There's a GPS, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That's
Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah, so there's, I think it's a GPS 1-6, and the fixes in order are I taught a putty tat, and then the hold is I deed. Yeah, I taught a putty tat. I deed. check it out, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And GPS 1-6, if memory serves me correct.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Maybe it was 3-4. I don't know. It was one of those. But, first time I saw it, and then I actually started to do a little bit of research and discovered the FAA actually does have quite the sense of humor in a lot of different areas as you check them out throughout the country.
Yeah. Well, so the other day, a couple weekends ago, we talked about our flying trip down to Gaston's.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I missed that. That had to be
that ball. Was a lot of fun, but one of the fixes into the ILS is directly over ILS into Mountain Home, the ILS runway 5 into Mountain Home. The final approach fix is called Gone Fishing or Go Fish or something like that, which for those of you who don't know, Gaston's is a pretty famous aviation resort, but it's also the number one trout fishing resort in the country. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's maybe like football fields get naming rights and, you know, United Stadium or United this and all that. Maybe now people will start naming fixes, and that way we can solve some of our budget problems.
Absolutely.
Everyone just has to change their company names to five letters.
Yeah. Absolutely. They had. Have you ever flown over the fix Mobley or Mobile?
Where is that?
Here in Chicago. It's out in the middle of the lake.
No, I haven't had that much opportunity. I've actually been over the lake a couple fixes, but not to that one.
Not to that one. But so my coworkers and I, we have a... We're trying to get the controllers to... Instead of calling it Mobile, we call it Mobley. And we're trying to see if we can slowly change it to from Mobile to Mobley.
Actually, I was on a... One, I was going into the Dwight Airport in the south side of the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And Dwight is, let's say, in a very rural area, if you can say that, just south of Chicago.
Sure.
And it has a hard surface runway. Guess how wide it is?
50 feet wide.
It's 21 feet wide.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you got to nail that one. Now, there's turf around it. But I was only shooting an approach, and... The controllers at Chicago departure had no clue. And so it was so funny. They said, "What is a fix?" And I gave him a fix. He said, "Okay, you're cleared to there." I could have made it back. I could have said it's Mobley.
Yeah.
And he's, "Okay, cleared to Mobley." But he had no idea there was a fix out there, which kind of shocked me. But it was kind of fun. It was just, you know, practicing out there. And
yeah.
Someday I want to go back and actually land at that airport.
Yep.
And, 21 feet. I just have to make sure the distance between the wheels is less than 21 feet.
You're going to have to nail it.
Yeah.
But there's a... what was I going to say?
I can't answer that question.
I don't know. Jeez, I hate it when that happens. But there... So going into Dwight, that's a 21-foot wide strip.
Yep.
Let's see. Doylestown, Pennsylvania is a narrow strip. We fly in there in a King Air. I think that's about 45 or 50 feet wide.
Well, I've been in a lot of airports with 50, even 35 foot, but I had never seen one that was 21 foot or anything less than 35. So, and I know they exist. Matter of fact, we should get some tweets from people letting us know the narrowest runways they've ever landed at.
Absolutely. If you have any of your favorite narrowest runways,
hard surface
runways out there, let us know. Hashtag it Simple Flight on Twitter, and we'll be happy to take a look at those and see if we can find some cool pictures of them too.
Yeah, that would be neat. That would be a nice national effort. Hey, I have to tell you something, a little bit changing the subject. I owe you a thank you.
Why?
For some training you gave me this week.
I did?
Don't you remember?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. So, Al, we have King Air Envy with Al and our flying club because we're flying our single engines and beautiful airplanes, glass equipped, or, you know, new paint jobs and all of that. But Al gets to, on a regular basis, fly a 2008 King Air 200, right?
Yes.
And Al hooked up the power cart. I hope your employers aren't listening. I don't know if you're supposed to, but we took off our shoes and kept it nice and clean, and Al took us through the avionics. So,
yeah.
Our thanks to him, and it was a great time. And it's
you were like a little kid in a candy store.
Oh, my goodness. It was so wonderful. I can't tell you how much fun it is, and it's just like before we have our license and you kind of fantasize about flying an airplane. I had to think, wow, I just sat there in the hangar thinking, I could be flying this thing. And in my mind, I was.
Absolutely. I think that's pretty cool. I remember you were sitting in there. You were all giddy and everything, and it was...
I'm giddy anyway, but...
Yeah, no, that was neat because it was kind of a neat opportunity to power it up, and we had to do some updates on the avionics. So
right.
That was kind of neat to you know, show you guys around. I know you'd been in it before, but I think this time was, I don't know, it seemed like you really enjoyed, well, I know you enjoyed both times, but this time it was a lot of fun.
Well, and another guy was with us who owns a 310, but he hadn't been, and so it's kind of, I think that's one of those things where you feel good moments we mentioned earlier. I knew it was his first time, and I know how much he loves the Beechcraft brand, after having owned a Bonanza previous to his 310.
Yeah.
And, I hadn't seen him so smiley and giddy, and so that just kind of was contagious at that point.
Absolutely. I think that, yeah, that was pretty cool. And I enjoyed showing you guys around. We made a flight plan.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yeah, into the FMS.
Do you remember where we went?
We went to Doylestown. No, was it Doylestown?
No. Other end of the country.
Oh, SFO?
Yeah.
Yes.
We flew, so we inputted, what was it, Palwaukee to
Spinner. Spinner, and then
Jet 80 to Coaldale direct.
It was very, very cool. And once we saw where the buttons were, as most pilots know, it was really not that much different from what we put into our Avidyne Integra or G1000s or any of the systems that are out there, Perspective by Cirrus, or by Garmin and Cirrus.
Right. You know what one thing is that I've noticed when people get into an airplane that they've never been before and they say, oh, how do you know how to fly this? There's so many switches. But my response is, all right, let's sit down in the airplane, look at the panels, and all the pilots are dumb. They have the switches labeled for every single thing.
Right.
And if you look at them, 90% of the switches are just lights.
Yeah, right.
And everything else is going to be an auto or off. So
it's kind of like the air sick bags. If you've ever read the bottom, it says in here, slob.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Actually, I noticed there's buttons you can buy, I think probably from Spruce and Sporties and all of that. But there's a button that says O, and I know we have young listeners,
beep,
so I'll
beep,
just
beep,
say,
beep,
yeah,
beep.
S-H blah blah on it. And they're funny buttons to put on your panel, probably more for your co-pilot or your companion that's flying with you, but it may not be a pilot. But that makes me smile as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, did you see that viral video about that guy that proposed to his girlfriend in a Diamond DA-40?
No.
Yeah, so it's gone viral. There's millions of people watch it. They're on the Ellen Show. They're on Good Morning America.
Get out of town.
No, it was pretty cool. I don't know why she said yes. He actually faked. He puts it into a steep dive over Lake Michigan. I think that's what brought it home. I know that airplane. It's based at Palwaukee.
Yikes.
And then he tells her the controls are non-responsive. But he had created a checklist that said, if controls unresponsive, follow this. So he created the night before and gave it to her, and she was playing co-pilot and taking him through. And bottom line, it says make sure mate is compatible and make sure he loves you very much, and will you marry me? And then all of a sudden you see the big smile come on her face, and she says, so there was no emergency? And he goes, no. So scared the crap out of her and then asked to marry her. asked to marry him, I mean.
That's a good way to get a yes.
Yeah, it's a good way to get some YouTube viral videos going, too.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. But I applaud him. That was excellent thinking and very creative.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I like that. And that's fun to hear stories. I know a guy that, a club member that proposed to his girlfriend in an airplane over the city skyline of Chicago.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I don't blame him. I always comment when I fly around, I know I may have a limited view and there's difference between man-made beauty and the natural beauty.
Right.
But flying into Chicago at night, you know, with the lights going over the lake, I just can't imagine anything more beautiful.
No.
You know, as I fly around the country, as limited as it may be, I just, somehow Chicago stands out from the others, and that is probably a prejudiced view just based on me living here for so many years, but it's just awesome.
It is. It really is. It's kind of a neat, real neat skyline, and, you know, there's really no other city like it in the world.
And I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've got some interesting shows coming up.
Tell me more.
Well, I think next week's show is going to be just as good as this week's show. We're going to have two guests on.
Okay.
And we're going to have Mr. Jim Krieger live with us. He's from the O'Hare control. He's the tower manager at O'Hare Airport. And his co-worker, Mr. Dave Seward, of the tower manager of the Kennedy Tower out of JFK in New York.
I grew up when I discovered that maybe I wasn't going to be a career airline pilot. My career choice was ATC. I just love being in the control tower. I just love what those guys do. And so I'm excited then for that show next week. It should be great. I'll try not to monopolize the conversation.
Yeah, I think we're going to have, both you and I are going to have some pretty cool questions for these guys. And it's what they're doing for aviation, it's kind of hard. You wouldn't even know that it's going on, but we're here to help them promote what they're doing because it's really, really important stuff that involves airport construction and NOTAMs and how to make everything better. And one thing that Jim said to me once, he said that the reason why we're doing this is because the flying public deserves this. So that's kind of cool to hear that kind of passion come out with a topic like airport construction and producing information, pertinent information to runway safety and airport safety for lots of airplanes going into a small little place from all over the world.
Yeah, and you said it before, it's... you said something about pilots being dumb. I want to make sure that was Al Waterloo that said that, not Mark Eppner. But in addition to making that information available, Jim's very focused on making it understandable quickly to be able to look and see and understand. And so, yeah, I know Jim, and he, whether he's talking as a pilot or as a controller, he's interested first and foremost in safety and making things better.
Absolutely.
Right? Like we say, amazing person doing amazing things in aviation.
Yeah, and his co-worker, Dave Seward of Kennedy Tower, mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to last week go out and meet him. We talked about that last show.
Yep.
And it was kind of neat to hear their perspectives on what's going on and what they're doing to make things better. Both of them as a team. And it's just going to be really, really neat to see them and hear their stories, because hey, we need it, and they kind of feel that if who else is going to do it? Nobody else is working on it, so they might as well, and because it needs it.
Yeah, no. Again, I think our audience not only will enjoy listening to them, but understanding that ATC is on our side.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even when Jim has told us, yeah, bring the plane into O'Hare, bring your little 180 horsepower Archer into O'Hare.
Yeah.
It gives us some tips on how to make it easier on everyone, but he feels very strongly that aviation is here for us all, and we all have to work together, and ATC's job is to, again, make us safe and make the fun continue, if you will.
Absolutely, and I think that's they're doing a great job at that. So yeah. Next week we're going to explore that, and the theme of that is what's on your runway.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I've obviously we've been working closely on building the show, getting ahead of the plane, if you will, and getting ahead of our show here is a lot of great shows coming up. People are starting to recognize and listen in, and I think people are going to be very pleased with what's coming, that we'll get to meet a lot of great people.
Exactly, and it's going to be a pretty exciting road, and we're starting to get a little traction, and people are hearing about the show, and I think we've got some pretty cool guests that are going to be in the queue.
Yeah, and just we talked about Twitter, the people starting to follow us and mention us is pretty cool. You and I are doing this for fun and to help and add value, but it's going places that I don't know if even you and I imagined in the just few short weeks that we've been doing this show.
Yeah, exactly. So if you like us and you want to help us,
yeah,
the best thing that you could do is retweet us. Send us a tweet, a message. Tell everybody that we're live on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time, and that'll help the show grow even more.
Right, and it's Ethan Olive, or as I like to say, Ethan Olive.
Ethan Olive.
It just helps spell it out right. What's
it does.
How do you spell Ethano? But EthanOlive.com.
Yeah.
I can spell that out. But EthanOlive.com is where you can listen to us. And then the archives are on simpleflight.net, and select radio, Simple Flight Radio, and then the archives selection under there to listen to past shows.
Absolutely. I don't know if you knew about this, but... if you search, have you ever searched your name under iTunes, Mark?
Actually, I have.
Yeah. What pops up?
Simple Flight Radio.
Simple Flight Radio. So if you go into iTunes on your iPad or iPhone or wherever, and you plug in either Al Waterloo, Mark Eppner, or Simple Flight, our show turns into a podcast, and you can download it for future use.
So. Yeah, it's a few minutes in. What do they say? You get 7 minutes of fame or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that uses about 10 seconds of it. So. Careful how you spend it.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, we're going to have a great show next week, and we're going to tell you about our next one after that on Sunday, the next Sunday. But I'm excited to be live back at the KPWK airport next week and with Jim Krieger and Dave Seward.
Yeah, it'll be great. And again, we encourage local pilots in the Chicagoland area if you want to stop by and visit us. It's not a huge room, but we've had some people stop by, and it's always interesting conversation. It's great to meet new people. So,
yeah,
Watch us live. Yeah, watch us, the studio audience in our fishbowl studio.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that.
Come on by.
So, Al, how are we doing on time? It's difficult to tell when we don't have a 10 o'clock.
Well, the crickets aren't out, or usually our good indicator is that the line guys are going home. But unfortunately, we have officially run out of time tonight.
Well, we have. I was afraid of that. But it's a great show. I appreciate you making arrangements to, even though we couldn't be live, to get the show on. It's, I think, again, something we're all becoming used to and enjoying. So,
absolutely.
Thank you for your accommodation.
Yeah, you bet.
And good luck. I'm going to assume by the time people are hearing this, you will be a seaplane rated pilot.
I think so. Well, we'll have to. I'll tweet it.
Yeah, tweet us. Let us know.
Yeah, so follow us on Twitter. Go to simpleflight.net and the radio page. You'll see it, and I'll be posting some pictures of the seaplane and all that.
Very good. Well, great show. Have a great trip today and for the rest of the weekend. And to all our listeners, hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend as late as it is. And wishing you tailwinds
and blue skies. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
This is Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.